Okay, so we're gonna get to the interview, our interview guest, who I think, Paul, we've had some excellent interview guests
We have.
over the year. You know, we had Harrison Mooney, we had Wyatt Arendt, we had the one and only Brandon Manson Sal, who is still my favorite interview of the whole podcast. But we got a pretty special guest coming on here in a minute or so, and I'd like to thank you for securing this guest, for getting him to come on with us, and we're going to pick his brain a bit.
Yeah, it was all my connections. I stalked him on Twitter and then I asked.
See, that's some folks, you get shit when you ask, you know?
It's,
You think
hey,
that,
you know
you
what
know?
I did the other day? Because this is the lesson. You just gotta ask. If you don't ask, then the answer is always gonna be no. Eugenie Bouchard, I never told you this because I was scared it was gonna work. Eugenie Bouchard was like on her Twitter, said, "I'm waiting for my food. People ask me questions." And everyone was like, "Will you marry me? Oh my God, you're the best." And then there's me, and I said, "Hey, Eugenie, do you want to be on our podcast?" And she didn't respond.
Oh, that would have been fucking, I can't even imagine.
Anyways, enough of this. Let's get to the real interview.
Let's get to the guest. We are fortunate enough to have Mr. Dan Murphy on the show with us today. I don't really think I need to introduce, because most of the people who are following this podcast, Paul, I think would know who Dan Murphy is.
All
Just
14
spot.
people, I think, know Dan Murphy.
I think all six people who listen, including your mom, would know who Dan Murphy is. But Murph, thanks very much for coming on with us. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem at all. There used to be a Dan Murphy that was a safety. I believe he played Concordia University, and then he was in the CFL at the Eskimos. So early on in my reporting days back in the late 90s, people always wondered if that was me, but alas, it wasn't.
People wondered if you were a safety from Concordia.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
I'm
that,
like,
were you
look at me,
talking
I'm six.
modes or something all the time?
It was just people when I first started reporting, and I'm like, I'm 6'1" and 175. I don't think it was a safety anytime in
That's
my history.
fair enough.
That's great.
Well, so we got Murph on. We're going to talk to him about obviously Canucks things and things that pertain to the Pacific Division here. We're going to ask him a few sports questions and segue into the buzzer beater at the end. But before we start talking about the Canucks, I wanted to hear your best Sean Pronger story that doesn't involve Chris Pronger.
The best, well, I mean, there's a lot of great Sean Pronger stories that don't involve Chris Pronger. And are you trying to just from his playing days, or just from in general days?
What about when you guys were writing the book Journeyman, when you guys were putting that together? I mean, did you guys have any funny things happen while you were doing that?
Well, I mean, I guess the one thing I can say is that when we were writing it, I think we did it a little different than a lot of other people that would ghostwrite, because I think most writers would interview the subject, write something, go back, interview them again, whereas Sean would write, 2,000-3,000 words, send it to me, I'd expand it, put some questions in it, send it back, and it just kind of grew organically. But there was more than, one occasion that, maybe I was writing on the plane from 1 till 3 in the morning, or he was writing at home from 1 till 3, and we'd send it to the other guy, and it might as well have been in Greek. And it just made no sense. We had to go back, cut it all out. So at the time, a few glasses of wine, a few beers in, guy gets it and can't understand it. So we did that a few times.
That's fair. I've never ghostwritten anything, but I can imagine the process would be tough. I've done the sports writing thing before, and if I had to pick up another guy's words and roll with them, especially after a few beers, I think it would turn into Pig Latin real quick.
We're lucky we had the same juvenile sense of humor, though, so it worked out for us.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll touch on the juvenile sense of humor as it pertains to John Garrett Kraft Dinner Pops a little later
We'll
on.
get there, definitely.
But for the time being, we'll segue into the Canucks. So today, I know that Willie Desjardins, when he came on at his press conference there, he was talking about how the lines, as they were at practice today and at practice over the last few days, are probably the lines we're going to see on Wednesday when the Canucks open up in Calgary. So those lines, Sedins and Horvat, Higgins with Bonino and Burrows,
Wait,
Bay
wait.
with Richardson and Cassian, and Dorsett with Mathias and...
You say the Sedins with Horvat?
Sorry, is that what I said?
Dan's, this is his first time ever talking about the
Verbat.
Canucks.
That's
Verbat.
definitely what I meant. I don't even know what a Canuck is. But yeah, so the question I had actually pertained to Bo Horvat. He's not in those 12, and obviously that shoulder contusion that that Desjardins referenced last week when he went down against the Oilers, I believe it was. Is that more serious than perhaps we're led to believe?
Well, I mean, I think this regime is very tight-lipped on injuries. And I would assume if he has begun skating on his own, it's not as bad. I mean, they said it's not as bad as originally feared. I know I saw him in a sling after the injury happened before x-rays, but clearly there was no broken bones in them. I guess it would be clavicle or collarbone. So I'm not sure how bad it is, but if he's skating again, that's a good sign. Same with BX. I don't know. If I was a betting man right now, I think I'm putting it 50-50 whether he plays on Wednesday. So I don't think we should read anything in the fact that Horvat's not in the top 12. When he's healthy, that's going to be interesting to me, because I think unlike Jensen and or Shinkarik, Horvat can play in the bottom six. And he can win faceoffs. He can play the fourth line center role. And I don't know if I saw enough to see, who you'd step in front of. There'd be nights that Sestito's going to play if it's against Calgary or someone. They want to dress a bigger lineup. But I just want to see how many minutes he's going to get when Horvat is healthy and whether it's worth keeping him up for the full season.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask a little bit about the decision-making behind that, sending someone to junior for what would be his fourth year. Do you think there's anything to the talks about having one eligible player that the Canucks, for example, could make Bo Horvat their one eligible player that could play in the AHL underage?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting theory. I think it would be a good one because obviously I think he's probably best suited to be a professional right now and play in a pro league and not go back to junior, just like Max Domi just went back to London.
Right.
So I think that the rules there, I guess, is to protect the CHL for having the best players go back and play in junior if they're not ready for the National Hockey League when they're still teenagers. So I understand that. Maybe you could have one designated player, but even that would rob each of those junior teams of probably the best player available. So, I understand where the CHL is coming from in that rule, but sometimes I do believe it hinders the development of the player. The other argument is when you send the best player back to junior, it helps the development of all the players he plays with.
Yeah.
So I guess there's two ways of looking at it.
Right. Well, let's talk about current Canucks. Let's go with the Sedins, start at the top. Can you give a little insight on how excited they are, or what their mindset is coming in with a new line mate for the first time in a couple of years here?
I mean, I think they're very excited. Right from day one in camp, everybody always asks them, what's best for you guys? Is it a right-handed shot? Is it a big guy? Is it a puck retriever? And their answer always is, it's the guy who thinks the game intelligently, the guy who thinks the game the same way they do. And even the first day of training camp, they said there wasn't a lot of communication on the ice because he was reading off of them already, and they were very excited about that.
Wow.
Basically, they've had some success with a right-hand shot, Nance and Carter. But for the most part, Alex Burrows has been their best line mate to date. So I think that they're happy with Verbata. I think that they've shown good chemistry with him. And I think overall, they're probably happy to be getting back to more of a system like Alain Vigneault. They'll probably have more offensive zone starts. I doubt they'll be killing penalties unless it's right at the end of the power play. So those hard minutes they want to play. Desjardins said today he'd love to play them all the time, but they're best when they're fresh. So they're going to do their best to keep them fresh. And to me, that seems like the same philosophy as when they played under Alain Vigneault. And I'm sure that is music to their ears. And they said after, and I don't think it was, there's a lot of veiled shot to Tortorella. I don't think anybody wants to throw, dirt on his grave, even though it's still $8 million to go on that grave.
it's going to be a heavy grave.
But it's nice to know the coach has a plan of how they want to play. Because I think, Tortorella kind of went by the seat of his pants.
Yeah, I think that hearing what Chris Higgins said in the preseason press conference, a few of the other guys talking about, how they enjoyed having input in things, it's clear that that's something that's going to benefit the team. I had a question about, obviously we got, kind of sound like a homer. The Canucks, they have two new top nine centers coming in. It looks like they're going to start the year with Bonino at 2C and Lyndon Vay at 3C. I was really impressed with how Vay played in the preseason. I thought no matter the situation he was put in, he looked strong, he looked dynamic, particularly on the offensive end. But, I thought that Nick Bonino played well too. Which of those guys are you looking at entering the year maybe a better way to ask that question would be, which of those guys do you think can have the better start to the year and as the season progresses, become more of the go-to guy?
Well, I'm like you. I was probably more impressed with Lyndon Day's preseason, and maybe because, you know, we didn't know a ton about him coming in. We'd heard he's a good skater. He's not a big guy, but finds his way into good spots, and I think he did that. But I think there's more expectations, of course, on Bonino. And, you know, just out of that, he's always going to be compared to Ryan Kesler. It's not fair, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Right? That's basically the trade. I know Sabisa was there, but people are going to say you trade Kesler for Bonino.
Yeah.
So I think there's more expectations. He had 24 goals last year. A lot of those were with Perry and Getzlaff on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he's got to prove that he can come and play with linemen that aren't like those two guys. He can play more than, I think, what he averaged, 13 minutes a game last year. Play more than that. Play a bigger role. And still contribute. So I think the expectations are higher for him. But I've liked what I've seen from him too. I mean, he's got a great shot. But my problem with both of these guys, as far as it pertains to Canucks, is you want size down the middle, and neither guy is all that big.
Yeah.
And in the Western Conference, especially the Pacific Division with the top teams, if your top three centers are going to be Henrik Sedin, Nick Bonino, and Lyndon Vay, you're already a little bit of a step behind because of the size.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. I mean, I guess the biggest center the Canucks have going into the year would be Sean Matthias, but they can't expect big minutes out of him.
No, and they're playing him at at the wing before the last couple of preseason games.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
I think that they learned the last preseason games that he played his best at center, and they do want some size there. So he could play in the 3C role as well, or the 4C. He can move up and down the lineup depending how well he's playing. I think any of those bottom three guys could do that.
Yeah.
It looks like that second line is going to be Bonino with Burrows and Higgins. What does Zach Cassian have to do to get up there?
It's funny because, so many people in the market want Zach Cassian to do well. And then there's cries, back when Vigneault had him that he's got to be on the second line. Well, now we're going into three separate coaches that have seen him and elected not to put him in the top six.
Yeah.
So it tells me there must be something there that each coach has seen that they don't feel he can play in that role yet. I don't know if it's maturity. I don't know if it's fitness. But all three of them, Tortorella, Vigneault, and now Desjardins, has elected to keep him out of the top six. He's got the size. He's got the skill. He can skate. He's got good hands. He's got good vision. It should be there. To me, it's probably a maturity thing, and maybe he's just not quite ready to step up and take that spot.
Yeah, that's fair. One last question relating to the Canucks. I think it's an important one going into the year. I guess I get the sense that people, I don't want to say that people don't want Ryan Miller to succeed, but listening to talk shows, listening to people, the sentiment I'm getting from people is that everyone loves Eddie Lack so much, and, with right reason. He's a wonderful guy, fantastic with the media. He's easy to engage, he's jovial, all these great things. But I feel like when I've been listening to some of the talk radio and talking to people in the market, they almost, it's not that they expect Ryan Miller to not succeed, but it's almost as though they don't want him to. They want Eddie Lack to be the guy eventually. I don't know how I feel about that because, frankly, in Ryan Miller, you got a guy who, when he was with Buffalo last year, was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, he shit the bed in St. Louis, but I mean, he didn't have much time to adapt to that system. Do you think there's some merit to that argument? Do you think that people, because they gravitate towards Eddie Lack as a person so much, want to see him as the guy?
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody loves a backup, especially in Vancouver, right?
Oh, yeah.
And especially in the Vancouver market. I don't think people want to see Miller fail. I just think that there's not a great deal of confidence yet. I think in a lot of ways, Miller kind of mirrors the Canucks. He has to go out and prove that he can be considered elite again.
Mm-hmm.
He can prove he can be considered a winner again.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say anybody would say it was fault in Buffalo. I mean, that team fell off the map. A lot of the best players, free agency and trades. But then he goes to St. Louis. People say that's the move that put them over the top, and they're losing the first round to a very good Chicago team.
That's fair.
So I just think that, I don't know how much competition there was for Miller to sign him, and yet he gets a 3-year, $18 million deal from Jim Benning, the guy who drafted him, got the relationship. So I think people's eyebrows are raised a bit, like, did he deserve that? And if he gets that, then he surely should have to put up some numbers for Vancouver. So there's a little skepticism, I would say, when it comes to Ryan Miller.
Okay, that's probably a better way to put it.
Interesting. Well, let's back out further and go for a broad picture. Straight answer, do you think the Canucks are making the playoffs this year?
I think everything would have to go right for the Canucks to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
you know, and I let me say this. I know the fancy stats guys say that they believe the Canucks can get back at the same year as last year because they were one of only two, I think, plus possession teams when it comes to Corsi not to make it. Maybe Jersey was the other one.
Yeah.
So I think that they believe it's going to be a rebound year for this team. The shooting percentage was, you know, uncharacteristically low.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, I'm saying they're going to finish 8th to 10th. And so there is a chance for 8th. I don't know how much. I mean, people say Colorado's going to drop off, but are they going to drop off 16 points?
I don't know if they're
going to. That's a huge drop off, right?
Yeah.
So. But I know we're going to go through the Pacific, so maybe I'll start with LA. I mean, there's a chance a team like LA can sleepwalk again, just like they did a couple of years ago where they had to sneak into the playoffs.
Yeah.
They know they're good. They know they can turn it on. But one of these days, that might catch them. And, you know, Jonathan Quick has been known to have spells. They've been known to go periods without scoring goals. So there could be a surprise team fallout. I'm not going to say the defending champs are going to be it. But, I mean, that could be one of those things. If everything goes right, the Canucks could sneak in. But,
I mean,
I just don't see there being enough scoring at this point. They could surprise me, and maybe the power play comes back and is up 5-6% from what it was last year, and that equates to a goal every couple games, and that would surely make a difference. But I don't know about team scoring right now for the Canucks.
Right. Well, what about a team like San Jose, who seems to be going through a lot of internal confusion with the stripping of the captaincies and all that stuff? Seems to me almost a bit what the Canucks are going through with a lot of locker room drama. Seems to me they might regress. All their signings in the offseason after all this talk of rebuilding was John Scott. And I'm not sure if how far that gets you in the Pacific Division. Do you think they regress? And if so, how much?
Hey, I got it. I think that the Sharks have the best named player entering this year. They got a guy named Barkley Goodrow who made their team. So that is got to be the best name in hockey.
Yeah, but they lost out on the Bracken Kearns, which is another good name.
I forgot about him. Yeah,
you
that's
know,
a good name.
Yeah. I still think they're a playoff team. I don't even think all these moves can mess them up. I think they've panicked. You know, they lost 4. It's a fashion in which they lost is why they've panicked. They're up 3-0 on the Kings and lose 4 straight. You know, they've essentially, they signed their two best franchise players and Thornton and Marlowe to 3-year deals, and then they were saying that they're not franchise players anymore at the end of the year. They've stripped the captaincy off another player, two guys they've stripped the captaincy off, and they're still in the locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, how is that going to work?
Yeah.
So I would think that the locker room is still going to be a little bit the same since they're still there. And I think that no matter what, if things are not going great, they'll just move Brent Burns back to forward.
Hmm.
They'll play Joe Thornton with them. You know, the goaltending's still a little suspect. I just think there's too much talent there for them to regress a whole bunch of follow-up players. I could be wrong. Maybe all these moves and the stripping of the sea is enough to cause a turmoil to maybe really make them fall. But I just think there's just still too much talent there with the centers they have and Pavelski, Couture, and Thornton. I mean, that's a heck of a lineup.
And that when you look at it on paper, it's really kind of inconceivable for them to miss the playoffs. But you look at Anaheim, and I mean, Anaheim's a strong team. They're probably going to make the playoffs. Phoenix is middling. What about our friends in Alberta? I mean, I look at I know I have a lot of Oilers fans as friends, which really must be a sad existence right now. Maybe not back in the 80s, but Oilers, Flames, obviously they sort of are headed in different directions, but they're kind of at the same point right now, right? I mean, there's not much between them, even though I do think that the Oilers should conceivably be a much better team, don't you?
Well, we keep waiting for the Oilers to make that one significant jump, right?
Yeah.
You know, the 20-point leap where everything comes together, but you know, the goaltending and the defense, I just don't know if it's going to happen. I think they are better in goal than they were at the start of last year with Scrivens and Fast.
Yeah.
I like the improvement. I like the fact they did go out and get Fane on defense and McKeaton, who's going to be out for the first couple of weeks. They got some size and some NHL players that have games. So I think they are improved. I like some of their forwards. But I think their forwards, aside from Taylor Hall, a lot of them are the same. You know, small, skilled guys, and Perrons and Eberle, Yakupov, you know. So I think that they can compete and they'll be around and they're going to win some games and they'll blow some games out because they've got so much skill and they're going to have a game that goes everything right. But I don't think they're making the playoffs. As for the Flames, last year they were the feel-good story, right? The little engine that could. They competed, they won games, and And it's going to be tough for them to top that. I think they're going to be in the same situation. Maybe they won't surprise as many teams, but now they've got another teenager making the team in Bennett. Monahan is their number one center. Mm-hmm. So again, there's just a lot of youth there to expect them to be a team that can be really performing consistently.
Yeah, I was impressed with Sam Bennett in the preseason. I thought he looked like a hell of a player.
That's great.
They do have some years before they're able to gather the roster. So you see the three California teams as the three playoff teams out of the Pacific?
I still do, yes.
Yeah,
I do.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think Anaheim, again, there's question marks. But again, their goaltending question mark could be, now that they've got Gibson, I mean, he might be the guy they go to right away.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy, and their defense just seems to kind of get it done. So, I think that their forward depth is they're going to score a lot of goals, and they've got a lot of grit, a lot of size. I like Anaheim's forwards a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Talk a little bit about Ryan Kesler and the move. How much of that? I know he handcuffed the Canucks a little bit with the trade down there. How much more do you think he'll flourish in Anaheim?
Well, I guess it depends what role they want him in. I think he's going to be good because he's going to, I think he carries a chip on his shoulder for no reason. He's one of those guys that thinks that everything's against him, and that might help him out in that kind of situation. For Kesler, well, first off, I'll say that, I don't think anybody ever questioned his desire to win last year. It's just like he never desired Roberto Luongo's, professionalism. But yet when you move those two guys out, guys that, didn't want to be Vancouver Canucks, and maybe there's a little addition by subtraction. Kesler, a new start, I think that he will be buoyed by that. I think that he's going to play well. He's healthy. He's always been in great shape. He's got the motor that goes forever. But I still don't think we're going to see any sort of the offensive production that we saw back in his two kind of career years with Vancouver. I just don't think he's that type of player at center. He's a shoot-first guy, not a pass-first. And sometimes that doesn't match. You have to find the right line in each form.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what we're going to do, I think that we're going to transition over to the buzzer beater section now, ask you some hockey and some other general questions. So we're going to close off the hockey chat portion of the podcast right now. So Paul, you can press stop on it.
Okay. For some reason you made me press stop. I'm not sure why.
I'm sorry. That was really awkward, and I feel bad for Murph. I think he might have had like an awkward giggle there.
And a Lane Vigneault type of giggle.
Oh, man. Yeah, we got to hide his face and everything. He's probably thinking we're the biggest amateurs ever, but let's get back to him.
We are the biggest amateurs.
Can't even say the word.
Well, All right. Here we go. Buzzer beater. Price is right. Music, go. All right. Well, this is our buzzer beater. World famous. May I say, world famous buzzer beater section.
And you can't hear it, Murph, but we have Price is Right music that plays in the background. It's pretty excellent.
Okay.
It's real professional and really well done. So this is the thing. You have to answer as quick as possible to these questions. And if you don't get it right, a subjective question, don't ask. But if you don't get it right, we don't feel your answer is adequate enough, you have to tell us your best Hockey Central Nick Kyprios story.
Those efforts at TSN, that one's already out there.
All right, here we go. Question number one. Who needs to have the biggest bounce back year? Is it Burrows, the Sedins, or Alex Edler?
Sedins.
Okay, non-hockey question. I saw you were giving a shout-out to Nick Costanica and his writing about baseball yesterday. I'm a huge baseball guy. What's your World Series prediction, Mer?
I will go with the Cardinals.
Cardinals, okay.
Ooh, over who?
Well, I really wanted the Nationals to do well because I was an Expos fan.
Yeah.
So I've kind of been crippled by, I almost cheered for them just because, but I'd love to see the Royals do well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cinderella.
We all want to see the Royals do well. Of all the new guys and all the new people around the organization, who's going to have the biggest impact? Is it Jim Benning, Willie Desjardins, Ryan Miller, or one of the new forwards?
Can I go off the board?
Yeah.
Trevor Linnan, for the franchise itself.
Wow.
Because you have to think that so much of it these days is corporate. It's shaking hands, it's mending fences, and there is nobody in this market that could plug more holes than Trevor Linnan coming out of what's happened over the last year.
Good answer.
That's fair. All right, one of my favorite Canucks kind of anecdotes that I've heard over the years comes from, God, it must be like a decade ago now. And I want to ask you if it's actually true. So did Kevin Bieksa really one-punch better Fedorov in that bar way back in 02?
Outside the bar, yes.
Outside the bar, okay. Wasn't Fedor Fedorov like 6'5 or something? No, he's a big kid.
He's tall and lanky, but it wasn't just Fedor. It was Kirill Koltsov, his trusty sidekick. I think he went down in heat, too. It was a 2-for-1.
Well, here's an off the board. What's the best thing Kevin Bieksa has ever done? Throw a glove. What else has he done on the ice? Throw a glove, one punch Fedorov.
Wasn't there another? Didn't he toss his helmet one time or throw someone's helmet in the corner?
He kicked the helmet or something.
Wasn't
that
last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, he kicked the helmet last year. That's right. So he threw a glove and he kicked the helmet. So I like the kicking the helmet. That seems more childish.
That's great.
That would be the Vigneault laugh with the Vern Fiddler impression.
Oh, yeah.
That's
good. Yeah, that was good too.
Who is the player most likely to miss the team bus?
Zach Cassian.
I love it.
We'll leave that one there.
Yeah. All right. This is the scenario. You've got a case of beer and a couch on a Sunday. What are you watching all day? NHL playoffs, MLB playoffs, NFL Sunday, say conference final Sunday, or the Sunday of a PGA major?
I have to pick between one of all those.
I think you can take them all, but you know.
You can also pick the ABC Sunday night Disney movie.
Okay, so is it like 3 straight hockey games, NFL football, 3 state baseball games? Well, it's going to be between hockey and maybe like the British Open, because you can start watching it at 3 in the morning and it goes to like 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, it does.
This is a tough question. Can I pass?
That's what teams are playing. You can pass.
All right, fine. All right. My fourth question. In 3 years, who will be the best player of these three? Zach Cassian, Jared McCann, Brendan Gaunce?
Zach Cassian.
Any reason why?
I don't think it's going to be Brendan Gaunce. I haven't seen enough. I mean, McCann has got tremendous upside, but I think in this day and age, try to bring him along a little bit slower. So I'm not convinced that either of those guys would be impact players at that time.
All right,
my fourth question. Murph, you're an Abbey boy, right? You're from Abbotsford?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Where'd you go to school?
NEI.
Okay, I went to Yale. Who's your favorite Abbotsford person going right now? Your sports guy, celebrity, what have you?
Adam Hadwin.
Adam Hadwin. Yeah, he's a great kid. He's a buddy.
And Nick Taylor. You got to throw him in there, too. Throw Nick in there, too. He made the PGA Tour as well. Yeah. And here's the story. I worked at Ledgeview in the shop with Adam's dad way back in the mid-90s.
Oh, with Jerry? Right on.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah,
back in the day.
That's awesome, man.
All right. This is my fifth question. Do you ever think someone will win the Safeway $1 million score and win?
The closest we've come,
it was Daniel.
I believe, was against San Jose. No, but that was a TSN game.
Oh.
That wasn't a Sportsnet game.
Okay.
I think the closest we came was a Marcus Naslin 4-goal game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought so. It was Daniel versus the Red Wings or Naslin versus... Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You ever think...
Yeah, but there was another time in San Jose when Naslin had a hat trick before the midway point of the second period, but never scored again. So I thought that was another time it could have happened.
Oh.
But it didn't.
One day.
So...
One day.
Yeah, one day. And the reason people say, like, why do you say could win 1 million? If there's a scoring change after... That person could have their million revoked.
Oh, that would suck.
How heartbreaking.
Could you imagine? Yeah. On like an empty netter or something redundant. Oh, man.
All right, my last question, Murph. A running gag on this podcast is that Paul doesn't really watch movies. Like, he hasn't watched so many movies that you feel most human beings would have watched, like things like The Lion King and The Godfather and stuff like that. So... Give him a movie recommendation. Give him one movie, either a movie from nowadays, a more modern one, or one that's a classic for you that he should absolutely watch.
Well, one is just in my consciousness now because I was on the plane the other day and I saw it in the contemporary movies, and it's called, and this is going to be some culture for you, Paul, it's called City of God. Subtitles.
I was just on the flight from Toronto to Vancouver this morning and I was about to press it. That's really weird that you say
that's
that.
That's the one.
All right.
That's the one.
City of God.
Fantastic.
All right.
Outstanding movie.
We have a bonus question. That's not really a question, but we hear you have a April Fool's Day, April Fool's prank story.
We do. Well, it never happened.
Oh.
But
a false alarm.
It was going to happen. Shorthouse wanted to, you know how there was the father's trip, and then there was the mother's trip, and then there's the sibling's trip?
Yeah. Yep.
Shorthouse said that we should make the deal on the air and try to be serious that Tortorella wanted to have the dog's trip.
That would have been
we never got to use it. Yeah. People would have bought it, too.
People would have bought it, but what arena would have provided the press box or whatever for the dogs, man? That would
the
have
been, Arizona Coyotes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well, they would have had to sell individual tickets. That would have been a third of their attendance, probably.
Exactly.
Oh, man. That's great. Well, thanks for coming on, Murph. It's been great.
Well, thanks for having me on, fellas. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, man. I appreciate you helping startups and podcasts like ours. So if, folks, you know where to find Murph, find him at Dan Murphy on Twitter. Go read his book. I bought your book. I haven't read it yet. It's sitting on my shelf. I'm getting ready to read it. So go buy Journeyman, and we'll see you on Sportsnet over the year, Murph.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks.
Well, that was fun.
Fun. Always fun. Always fun to have guys like Murph on. I love the anecdotes. I love the stories.
That's great. Darts Dog Day.
Dog Day and Point Roberts. I should have asked them a question about that pullout bed that Gillis had installed in Torts' office. If it's still there and if it's like the saddest thing in the whole world.
It sucks that I have a bunch of questions now that I want to ask. Like, does Jim Benny know about capgeek.com? Because he has that giant like chalkboard.
That thing is amazing.
Like, why does he put all this time into it where there's a website you can do anything you want, Jim? Jim, yeah. If you're listening, tear down the wall and just have a projector with CapGeek. It'll work much better.
And, like, is Lawrence Gilman, like, that jaded girlfriend who's kept on as, like, a friend after the boyfriend finds a better girlfriend? He's like, oh, okay, fine. Well, I'm still here if you want me.
Does Trevor Linden cycle to and from Point Roberts just out of spite?
Oh, he really does. By Point Roberts, you mean Switzerland.
Switzerland, Geneva. Okay, well, that's been great. Paulo made a 22 on Twitter. You are Dan the Max on Twitter. This is our podcast that still doesn't have a name. And
no, it will.
And it will. Go watch a movie. Tell me about it. And we'll see you next time.
Well, and next time is tomorrow when we talk about the Eastern Conference. We talk about baseball and we talk about football.
Foosball? Did you say foosball?
Foosball. You know, when you have the thing with the guys where you're flicking the knobs. And I
wow, that's
flicking the knobs.
That's Wednesday night, really.
That's really wrong. Well, maybe tomorrow we can start talking about Paul Kayla's fantasy team and how, you know, you have a particular affinity for it.
Would you pick Joe Pavelski over Jamie Benn?
More question coming. That's what we should have asked, Murph.
Oh, we should have. All right. Take care, folks.
Hashtag see ya.